People ask me sometimes questions about the economy, about what's going to happen with interest rates or unemployment, and I don't know. I know a little bit about game theory. Okay. So that's what I want to talk about today. So before I start, has anybody had any experience already with game theory, come across it before? You have? So in what context? I'm sorry? Oh, theoretical math. Okay. Anybody else? All right. So that's good. So if I make any mistakes, no one will know. Okay. So the best part of any, when I teach my classes, my economics classes, I tell the students that the best part of any class is definitions. So let's start with the definition. So game theory is the study of strategic interactions. And the key ingredient here is the strategic part. What I mean by strategic is we have groups of agents all making decisions. And the key thing is that what I want to do, my best choice, depends on what you're doing. That's the strategic part. So this is distinguished from what we call decision theory. Decision theory is just a special case of game theory. Let me move this out of the way. Where there's only one person involved. Okay. So examples of this, where we use game theory. In economics, a big one is competition between firms. So we see this all the time, for example, in airline pricing. We read all the time about one airline announces raises its prices, and the expectation is that other airlines will match it. Sometimes that happens, sometimes it doesn't, and then the original airline has to, if it doesn't, the original airline has to lower its prices back again. Okay. You think about Coke and Pepsi. Yeah. Anytime we have a few large firms competing with each other, this is going to be a strategic interaction. Okay. So this is sort of the intermediate case in economics of market structure. At one extreme of market structure, we have perfect competition, many, many firms, okay, all in the same market. At the other extreme, you have monopoly. At those two extremes, we don't really have strategic interactions so much. If in a competitive market where there are many, many firms, any individual firm is so small that it just takes the conditions in the market as given. There are no real meaningful strategic interactions there because there are too many firms involved. It's like an individual drop in the ocean. At the other extreme, monopoly, well, there are no strategic interactions because there's only the one firm. What's in between, when you have a few firms, oligopoly, that's where game theory really comes in. And that's the area that, as economists, we're very bad at predicting and explaining behavior. Okay. We'll see a little bit about why that is, I think, today. Okay, so competition between Hello. sorry? It says low bat. You know what? I don't need it. Okay. I'll just talk louder. My freshman class I'm teaching this semester, I have almost 500 students, so this is nothing. This is nothing. So competition between firms, that's one big example in economics. Another important one, or more on the consumer side, is what we call network goods. So a network good is one where the value to me of consuming that product increases the more other people are using it. Okay. So can anybody think of an example of a network good that would satisfy that definition? It's worth more to me when more other people use it. Yep.
Some sort of massively multiplayer game with more people that are playing the game.
Exactly. Some kind of large multiplayer game. If it might be a really good game, but if I'm the only one playing it, it's not that much fun. Okay. What else? Yes?
iTunes.
Why?
Because if you're the only one using it, then, there's only the songs you want to hear.
Right. So iTunes, any of these platforms, here the interaction is a little more complicated than with the games. With the games, it's clear. I need more people using it so that I have someone to play with. With iTunes, I want other people to also use iTunes so that record companies, producers, will make their product available on iTunes. If I'm the only one using iTunes, there won't be much selection of songs to choose from. Okay, so that's an excellent example. What else? Yeah.
Cell phones.
How so? Okay, I didn't even know about that. If you touch things, you can touch someone else with an iPhone, and you can...
It's like a different phone.
Yeah? Yeah, I don't either, but that's an excellent example. If you're the only one with such a phone, that's not going to help you. What else? Yes?
What about airplane tickets? Like on a Friday, on a weekend night, the ticket price will increase because more of the people are trying to get a flight?
So that's an example where you don't want other people wanting the same thing that you want. That's what we call a congestion good. So that would be sort of a negative network good. But that's again an example of game theory. You care what other people are doing. Yes.
Facebook.
Yes, exactly. If you think about competition between Facebook versus MySpace, okay, people are going to go to the one where there are more other people. Okay. What else? Yes? Okay, so that could be absolutely. So that, I think that's related there. Any kind of product where there are large economies of scale, say there's a large fixed cost of production, so making a million of them isn't much more expensive than making one. So I think about a new drug, for example, where the real cost of a new drug is the research and development. Okay. Or software, same thing. Once you've created the software, it's easy to make copies. That's a situation. If you have to get... Here's a tip. If you have to get a horrible disease, get one that lots of other people have. Okay. Because then drug companies are really going to want to solve this problem. They're going to be willing to incur this large cost, the R&D cost, so they can get a drug they can sell to many people. Okay. So these are all good examples of network goods. I think one interesting example, you think about fax machines. The technology for the fax machine had been invented 100 years ago. Okay? But when it was introduced, it failed. Okay? Because the technology was there. When the fax machine was reintroduced much later, it was basically the same thing, but it succeeded. And that points to an indeterminacy. The first time the fax machine failed, no one really bought it, so no one bought it. Second time, people bought it, so people bought it. So it's another one of these situations. There's no point in being the only person with a fax machine, even if it's a really nice fax machine. The other thing to keep in mind is if we have competition, say, think about Facebook and MySpace or different online games, it's not necessarily the case that that the superior product is going to win. Imagine there are two games you can play, and you know that one of them is better than the other. Say game A is just better than game B, but nobody else is playing game A. Everybody's playing game B. Which one are you going to pick? Game B. Okay. So once an inferior product can win, especially if it gets a head start. Okay. So this is a hint. I said earlier, economics is bad at predicting what's going to happen in oligopolistic markets. This is an example of why. There's an indeterminacy. We don't know what to predict is going to happen. Okay. So this is a couple of examples from economics. There are many more. This also shows up in game theory. Also shows up in biology. I'm really not an expert on biology, but let me just give you a quick example here. Think about coloring of butterflies. Okay. You can be either bright colored, or you can try to camouflage yourself. Okay. Then if you're a predator, you can either eat brightly colored butterflies or not. There's one more ingredient. Okay. Is a butterfly poisonous or not? Okay. So there's a biological cost to a butterfly of being poisonous. You're spending calories on that rather than on other things. Okay. But it may be worthwhile as a species. If you're going to be brightly colored, roughly speaking, you need to do one of two things. Either you need to be poisonous, or you need to look a lot like another butterfly that is poisonous. Okay. So there's game theory that shows up in evolutionary biology as well. Okay. So any questions so far? We haven't really done anything. Okay. So for our purposes, we're going to think about a game having three parts. It's very windy. Okay. You need to know who the players are. Okay. You need to know for each player the choices . So we have a set A for player I. A sub I is the set of choices available for player I. So you can think about this as, for the firms, what price do I want to set today? That's the action that I'm choosing. Then, we need one more ingredient. What else do we need? Yes?
How to keep score?
Yes, we have to know what the result of different combinations of actions is. So we write down what every player chose, and we have to know how happy each player is with those results. We're usually going to represent the happiness of players by numbers. So sometimes this makes literal sense. If we're thinking about competing firms, maybe we want to measure their happiness by how much profit they're making. In other cases, say in the evolutionary biology, maybe you just want to keep track of how well you're able to reproduce and send your genes on to offspring. You have some way of measuring that. But more generally, we just want to think about measuring how happy you are. And the exact numbers, the scale may not matter so much, But we want to keep in mind that a bigger number is better than a smaller number. Okay, it's a way of measuring happiness. So we're going to write that usually as a function for player I, as a function indexed by I, that's going to depend on the action chosen by every player. If we have n players, we just write down a list of the choice that each player made. So the price that Delta chooses, the price that American chooses, the price that United chooses. We put that all in and say, aha, well, here's the payoff that Delta is going to get when it chooses its price and the other firms choose their prices. Okay? So we'll do many examples of this, but this is nevertheless a good time to ask a question. Yes? What a firm is? It's just, think of it as a company that it wants to sell you something. So an airline could be a firm, or more generally, the University of Texas at Austin is a firm. Okay. We don't always want to make profit. I'm not sure what we do want to do, but other questions? Okay. So again, the distinction here, the strategic interactions, this is writing it down this way shows what I mean by strategic interactions. My happiness depends on the actions of all the other firms. Okay? When I think about what action I want to choose, my best choice may then depend on what the other firms are choosing, the other players are choosing. Okay? Decision theory would be the special case where my happiness depends only on my own action. Okay. Notice that this is still formally game theory. This is a function of all the actions. It's just a particular kind of function that doesn't vary with everybody else's choices. Okay. So decision theory is a special case of game theory. Another special case, a question. Yes. Let me ignore that for now and come back to it. Okay. Let's see. I'm not doing good board management skills. Another special case zero-sum games. A zero-sum game is a case where we add up the total payoffs for all players, okay, and they add up to zero. Okay. So this is, if you think about playing chess, a competitive game, there's a winner and a loser. So we can represent that mathematically. The winner gets one, the loser gets -1. If it's a stalemate, they both get zero. This is a zero-sum game. Anything I gain is taken from you. Historically, in the development, the mathematical development of game theory, zero-sum games are very important. They have a special mathematical structure that makes them particularly easy to analyze. Okay. And so when we first started learning about game theory, there was a natural focus on zero-sum games. If you're thinking about games, if you're literally thinking about games, we're mostly thinking about there's a winner and a loser. So it's natural to start here. Historically, these are very important. In terms of practical importance today, in economics, zero-sum games are not that big a deal. So economically, less relevant. We're often thinking about, in economics, we want to think about how can we make the pie bigger for everyone. A zero-sum game is we have a fixed-size pie, and we're just arguing over how to divide it. Okay. In economics, we hope we can do better. We hope to make them a bigger pie. Okay. Questions so far before we start doing things? Okay. So we have these three ingredients: players, action choices for each player, and then the resulting payoffs. For most of what we're going to do today, we're going to think about the case of two players. Okay. Let me switch over here now. When we think about two players, the advantage of that is we can represent a game in a graphical way in kind of a nice simple pattern. What we draw what's called the normal form. Of a two-player game. Okay. So we have two players. We have two players, and just for the sake of this example, let's say that each player has two actions. Okay. So we can represent this game in a box. Okay. We're going to have one row player. We think about the row player, their action choice represents which row of this matrix is being chosen. We'll think of a column player. We're going to represent their action by which column is chosen. So we're going to have Ralph, the row player, and Candace, the column player. And we can give the actions whatever names we want. So maybe let's be really creative. Call them A1 and A2 for Ralph, B1, B2 for Candace. Okay. So Ralph is a player. Just chooses the choices are A1 or A2, and those could be prices. They could be whether or not to be brightly colored. They could be anything. Candace has two other choices. Okay. We fill in the box, we fill in the entries in the matrix with the resulting payoffs. Okay? So we can say, if Ralph chooses A1 and Candace chooses B1, we're going to write Ralph's payoff here, and then Candace's payoff. Okay? And that's a game. We'll do examples. Okay. That's a way of summarizing these three ingredients. Okay. We just draw a matrix. The dimension, so you could do this with more than two players. It gets harder to draw. You can do it with more than two actions per player. That doesn't get that much harder to draw. You just make a bigger matrix. So for two-player games, this is an extremely useful way of representing a game. What I'd like to do now, the big question, we can define a game. We can write it down this way. We'll have plenty of examples. The question for economics is, once we write it down, trying to predict what the outcome will be. If we can describe a situation, what we want to do is predict the outcome. Okay? And that's what we're going to turn to next. So before we hand out the handouts, are there any questions? Yes. If someone is playing chess, then they can win or lose, yes, or they can tie. So that's an example of a zero-sum game. In principle, chess is a two-player game. There's a finite number of possible things that can happen in chess. You could represent chess this way. That we would need a lot of paper to do. Okay. Other questions? Okay. So you'll get these handouts. There are two different kinds. There's no real difference. It's not that one is harder than another or contains different information. It's just sometimes you're going to be player. One color corresponds to player Ralph, and one corresponds to player Candace. So if you want to work in a group with people, make sure that you all have the same color handout. I think they're orange and yellow. Otherwise, it doesn't really matter. What I will ask you is, please don't flip ahead. Okay, we're going to go through one page at a time, and it will be less fun if you flip ahead. I'm sorry?
I was just here because my dad dragged me along, so my mom was just taking me back
home. All right. Okay. If there are extras, I'm going to grab one. May I have one of each packet, please?
Yes.
Yellow?
It's yellow, thank you. Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry.
Check to see if there's any spares.
Oh, don't worry about it. I'm fine. It's not worth the time. Okay.
I'll do it for
All right. Thank you. All right. So, does everybody have a packet that wants one? Okay. So here's what's going to happen. We're going to see each different page is going to correspond to a different situation. You're going to be told which role you're in. You're going to be either Ralph or Candace. You're going to be told something about the game that you're playing. And you're going to be asked, based on that information, to make a choice of action. Okay, so you can go. We can go ahead. We can flip to the first page. Okay, so this is going to take incredible willpower. It's double-sided. Don't look at the next page. Look only at situation one. Shield your eyes. you'll see you're given some information about the game, and you're asked, what will you do? I'm sorry? Was there a question?
No.
No, okay. You'll see here, you're not told all of this information. In particular, you're told who the players are. There's Ralph and Candace. You know the actions available to each player, and you're told your own payoffs. In this situation, situation one, you're not told the payoffs of the other player. Okay, so take a minute. So the question is, what will you do? Okay, and then response. Now, you're asked, what will you do? You can answer that in any way you like. It doesn't have to be a particular action. You might say, you can answer in any way you like. Maybe you have seven, later examples, maybe you have seven choices, and you say, well, I'm definitely not going to do number six. Beyond that, I don't know, but I'm not going to do six. You might say, it depends on whether the moon is full. When the moon is full, I will choose action one. Otherwise, I will choose four. You can answer this in any way you want. Okay. All right, so any questions before we start on situation one? This one, I think, will be relatively quick. All right, go ahead and figure out what you'll do, write it down, and then in a second we'll talk about it. Oh yes, you want bigger numbers. The bigger the number, the happier you are. Okay. Does anybody need a little more time to work on this, or are people done? Raise your hand if you want more time. All right, take your time. Okay. Raise your hand if you want more time. Okay, take your time. Okay, so what we'll do, in a second I'll ask for people to tell me what their choices were in each role. I've got a prediction hidden underneath this, I covered it up here, I've got a prediction for what I'm going to hear from people. So we'll see in each situation how good a job I do predicting what answers you're going to come up with. Okay, so first of all, let's start with Ralph. How many Ralphs do I have out there? Many Ralphs. Ralph the role player. Okay. Any Ralphs out there want to tell me what they chose? Yes, Ralph.
Up.
Okay. Other Ralphs, do you agree?
Yes.
Any Ralphs who don't agree? Okay. So, Ralph, tell me. Here, let me show you, for you Candaces, let me show you what Ralph was looking at. He saw his own payoffs. Okay. If he chooses up and Candace chooses his left, he gets 100. If Candace is choosing left and Ralph chooses down, he gets 0. And it's the same pattern if Candace is choosing right. Okay. So why choose up? Ralph.
It's a bigger payoff.
Yeah, 100. Here's some... Technically speaking, 100 is more than 0. Okay. So that means happier. Okay. So how were you able to pick up? How were you able to choose your action even though you didn't know what Candace was going to choose? Ralph. Oh, you're a Candace. I see. Ralph.
Because I know what my own payoffs are, so I know that they'll be the same either way.
Right. You don't care. You don't know what Candace is going to do here, but you don't care. Okay. You get 100 if you choose up, regardless of what Candace does. Okay. Any other comments that Ralphs would like to throw in there before we talk about Candace? Ralph.
So... If you chose down intentionally, then you could have just sabotaged Candace, though.
Well,
because either way, she would still have a payoff of 0.
No. What do we know about Candace's payoffs from this sheet?
Nothing.
This is only your own payoffs.
Oh.
Okay. And that raises a very good point. This payoff includes this whatever effect it has on Candace and how you feel about it is already in these numbers. Okay, so you can think about this. The game determines some kind of physical outcome. Okay. Maybe I make high profits, Candace makes low profits. How we feel about that physical outcome is recorded in the number. So this is a very important point. Whatever I think about how my actions are affecting Candace, how my feelings about that are already reflected in this number. Okay, so if I make a high payoff and Candace makes a low payoff and that makes me feel sad, this number would be small. Okay? So all you have to do, you're given these numbers, they tell you how you feel. You don't have to worry about Candace anymore. That's already incorporated into this number. Plus, in this case, even if you wanted to worry about Candace, you don't have enough information to do it. Okay. All you know is your own payoffs. Other comments by any Ralphs out there? Okay. Candace. Let me show you what Candace was looking at.